Hello and welcome to a new edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. This is the international service of the Argentine Radio, transmitting from the city of Buenos Aires via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, and also via internet on rae.com.ar. My name is Fernando Farias, and together with sound technician Walter Danesi, we'll be bringing you this show in English for Monday, October 6, 2025. We're going to have news. We're going to have music, we're going to have the artist of the day, plus an update on science. And we'll be sharing with you a very interesting interview that was given to a YouTube history channel on the Irish Argentine community, a researcher from Ireland called Patrick Spate, who talked about the history of the Irish community, which is a very interesting one. And if you are in the United States and you're familiar with the history of the Irish community in the States, you will notice some very interesting differences between the two waves of migration out of Ireland in the 19th century to the US on one side and Argentina on the other hand. But that will be later on. If you want to get in touch with us, send an email to qslrae@gmail.com or a letter to Maipú Street 555, then of course Buenos Aires, Argentina. Either way, it's okay for sending reception reports if you are at the AXA. This show airs on the shortwaves of WRMI. The frequency is 5850 kHz. And you can also listen to us via internet on rae.com.ar, as well as our app for mobile devices, Digital RAE, that you can download for free.
RAE, Argentina al mundo. RAE, Argentina, 面向世界.
RAE, Argentina vers le monde.
RAE, Argentina to the world.
RAE, 世界に向けて, Argentina.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
La RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentinian in the world.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
Okay, folks, coming up an interview on the Irish community of Argentina, but before that, let us listen to a song by Divididos from their third studio album, La Era de la Boludez. This is a track from the year 1993 that was a massive, massive radio hit. This song is one of those tracks that you would listen to, I don't know, four or five times a day in 1993 because it was so, so popular. ¿Qué ves? What do you see? Divididos on RAE.
Falta envido, truco, chiste nacional. Estamos en vena, grita el mayoral. Y pagas el vale un día después. Cuando la mentira es la verdad, ¿qué ves? ¿Qué ves cuando me ves? Cuando la mentira es la verdad, la prensa de Dios lleva póster. Central.
el bien y el mal definen por penal. Vía la chapita, porrón en Palomar. Cruzando la vía pa' poderla pasar. ¿Qué ves? ¿Qué ves cuando me ves? Cuando la mentira es la verdad. ¿Qué ves? ¿Qué ves cuando me ves? Cuando la mentira es la verdad. Chapita, porrón en Palomar. Cruzando la vía pa' poderla pasar. ¿Qué ves? ¿Qué ves cuando me ves? Cuando la mentira es la verdad. ¿Qué ves cuando me ves? Cuando la mentira es la verdad. ¿Qué ves? ¿Qué ves cuando me ves? Cuando la mentira es la
And after that track by Divididos, we're going to play an interview that was recorded in 2022 for the channel History Now. You can find this next interview in its entirety on YouTube. It's an interview with a researcher called Patrick Spate, who did a lot of research into the history of the Argentine Irish community for the book that was he was presenting back then, Irish Argentine Identity on an Age of Political Challenge. I'm pretty sure that you can find that book in the UK, in Ireland, and very likely in the United States. He talks about, well, the history of the Irish community, including some notable Irish Argentines, such as Camila O'Gorman, Admiral William Brown, and Rodolfo Walsh, just to mention a few. This is an interview that we're going to play in its entirety on today's program.
Hello, welcome to this week's History Now. Today I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Patrick Spate to the studio, who's going to be talking to us about his research and book on the Irish Argentines. Patrick, thanks very much for coming in to talk about your book. It's on the Irish in Argentina in part. Perhaps people are more familiar with, you know, the Irish diaspora. We automatically think of North America or Australia or things like that there, but there has been a significant population of people of Irish extraction in Argentina for quite some time.
That's correct, Barry, and it's probably a good point of departure, because one of the interesting aspects of the Irish community in Argentina, or the Irish diaspora in Argentina, is that they confronted a completely different social reality. Because the Irish who went to the English destinations like New York or Britain, New Zealand or Australia, confronted that historic antagonism. That antagonism is between Catholicism and Protestantism, the conflict between Ireland and Britain. That was apparent to them when they went to the United States, when they went to England. They were discriminated against. No Irish need apply, etc. But in Argentina, you had a Catholic population, a Catholic diaspora, moving into a Catholic nation. A Catholic nation which had a constitution which basically determined that the president must be a Catholic and that one of his duties must be the defense of the Catholic Church. So you would expect, for example, that the Irish who went to Argentina then would have an opportunity, having freed themselves from this historical antagonism between Catholicism and Protestantism, because there weren't many Protestants in Argentina. There was an English colony because Argentina was seen as part of the informal empire, the British Empire. So you did have an English colony there of business people. And when the Irish went there, there was no conflict whatsoever, no conflict whatsoever between the English and the Irish. Because the Irish became the workers for the British companies that established themselves there.
There are debates about when the Irish first landed in Argentina. Some I've looked at some things which say, you know, the 16th century. There's a very famous Father Field, who I know you're familiar with. So given that there is such a long-standing Irish, you know, not so much as a community, but Irish involvement in Argentina from that time to the time that your research covers. Did this Irish community evolve over that time, or was it just, you know?
The Irish community did evolve. You're right, Father Field was perhaps the first Irishman to step foot on Argentine soil, and it's reputed that he's the first person to celebrate Mass in Argentina. The Irish arrived in fits and starts, really, because they were part of the flight of the wild geese, their descendants. They arrived in Spain. They became part of the Spanish governance and part of the Spanish civil service. And so when the Spanish began to develop their interest in Argentina, the Irish came out with them. Mm-hmm. So a small community of Irish people were there.
Okay, and there's, of course, 19th century is a big, sort of a very important period for the Irish going to Argentina. We're more familiar with, you know, this vision of the Irish person fleeing famine, you know, in the mid-19th century. But the people who went to Argentina in the 19th century weren't necessarily those people escaping famine?
No, they weren't. I mean, many of them were entrepreneurs, business people who set out to make money. And Peter Sheridan was one of the first to start the sheep rearing industry and the saladeros, that's the meat salting industry there. And in a way, they were looking for labour. And they decided that the best labour was their own family and friends back in Ireland. And the connections were made, and families and individuals came out and took up positions in sheep farming.
Okay. And these people who were very much involved in the sheep farming and the industries attached to that, where did they come from in Ireland?
They mainly came from the Midlands, okay. And some came from Wexford. Yeah. But the majority of the Irish came out after the famine. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that they were impacted adversely by the famine.
Yeah.
Because to go to Argentina required money. And so they became part of what was referred to as a chain migration. They went there as an opportunity rather than being people who were fleeing oppression. And some of the Irish that I met when I was doing my research, and these would have been people in their 80s and 90s, were pained to say that they were not affected, their families were not affected by the famine. They wanted to distance themselves from the famine. And one particular man, a father, Francisco Murray, he made it very clear, no, we came out as an opportunity. Mm-hmm. We were not fleeing Ireland, mm-hmm. you know, when he was referring to his family roots. Mm-hmm. But the Irish did go out, and the key figure who helped mobilise the Irish and provided them with a kind of their endogenous kind of platform, as it were. I mean, because they became a community that simply lived amongst themselves, intermarried amongst themselves. That's why they were described as endogenous, was Father Fahey. Okay. And he came from Galway. Now, Father Fahey is a man who is idolized in the Irish Argentine community. They see him almost as a secular saint. But they don't take into consideration some of the other aspects of his life in Argentina. And one episode refers to Camilo O'Gorman. I'm not sure if you've heard of Camilo O'Gorman. Camilo O'Gorman was born into a well-established Irish Argentine family. She was 18 years old and fell in love with a Jesuit priest. They eloped. They moved to the north of Argentina. The very fact that they eloped caused consternation and shame within the Irish Argentine community. They felt that their community had been held up to ridicule. And so they moved north, and their idea was to go to Bolivia. But they needed to earn money to get there. So in the north, they established themselves as teachers in a little village. And they did so well, and they helped so many people, and the school was so successful that the mayor constantly wanted to do something to say, look, we want to give something back, so we'd like to organize a party for you or something. And they kept on saying, no, we don't want that. But on one occasion, they capitulated. They gave in and said, okay, we'll go and have join you and have this party. And so they were getting all these accolades and stuff. And then in walked a priest called Father Gannon, who Irish priests then were peripatetic. They moved around to provide ministry to the small Irish communities and stuff. And he spotted them, and he betrayed them. Okay. And he made it, when General Rosas and Father Fahey discovered that they'd been found, they decided that an exemplary measure had to be taken. Basically, they should be executed. They were brought back to a place called Santos Lugares, which is a small distance from Buenos Aires. And they discovered that Camila was pregnant, 8 months pregnant. And under the constitution, a woman who was pregnant could not be executed. So Rosas asked a Irish-Argentine lawyer, Sarsfield, to come up with some kind of legal ruse that would allow them, theological legal rules that would allow them to execute this woman. And before they executed her and her lover, her partner, they gave her a glass of holy water so that her unborn child would be baptized and therefore would go to heaven. So that was an interesting story for me in how Irish Argentines, in a sense, related to the state. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't stand up for this woman. Yeah. They felt that their identity, their personal integrity, their sense of who they were as Catholic Irish had been compromised by this woman's extraordinary sin.
In terms of your research, you spent some time in Argentina. Could you tell us how long you spent there and what way you approached your research when you were out there?
Well, I spent 9 months there. And the focus of my research was to explore how Irish Argentines responded to the rise and fall of Perón, mm-hmm. who became president between 1946 and 1955. He was overthrown in a coup d'etat in 1955. And then he returned to Argentina in 1973 and then died on the 1st of July, 1974. So my purpose of my research was to find out how they responded to his redistributive policies when he became president in 1946, and then to find out how they responded to the Dirty War, mm-hmm. which took place between 1976 and 1983. It ended after the Falklands War. And that is a story in itself, because obviously you have to make contact with people in Argentina. You want to find people who would be the gatekeepers to the Irish-Argentine community, who would facilitate your entry into their homes to do interviews. And the first kind of big surprise was when I phoned up several people from my office at Queen's University. And I remember speaking to one Irish priest who got very concerned. He said, look, I don't mind introducing you to my Irish-Argentine parishioners, but I'm a bit nervous that you're going to talk to them about the Dirty War. Irish-Argentines don't like talking about the Dirty War. And furthermore, they don't like talking about a man called Rodolfo Walsh, a writer and investigative journalist who was murdered and disappeared by the Argentine state in 1976.
So a big part of this was you're conducting interviews, as you've said. Now, out of all the information, there's a very interesting sort of quirk, if you will, about Irish Argentines that I've heard from a number of sources, that they speak English with an Irish accent.
That's right. It surprised me as well. The first person I met, I think, when I arrived in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, was a writer called Juan José Delaney. He's a novelist, an academic, and he explores the aspect of porteño. That's the way in which the Irish used English and Spanish. And he explores that in all different, in all its dimensions. He also had an interest in Rodolfo Walsh. But when he sat down and he met me in a cafe, I found it hard to believe that he was Argentine, because he spoke in an accent that could be traced right back to Westmeath, where his family had originated in the 1860s and 1870s. Okay. And this particular quirk, as you called it, this particular characteristic, was something that was common to the Irish Argentine community who were of a certain age. Mm-hmm. So the older they were, the more pronounced their Irish accent was. And they reveled in that. I remember one particular character telling me how he arrived in Dublin Airport, and he was being questioned by passport control, and they couldn't believe he was Argentine. They said, no, you're Irish, aren't you? And he said, no, I'm Argentine. And then another interesting little story about that was a priest called Father Bob Kilmeade. Now, he wasn't a priest then, he was a seminarian, and he happened to be travelling to London, and this was in 1976. And when he arrived, his English was so perfect, and he spoke with such a pronounced southern accent, that they arrested him, because they thought he was an undercover IRA man, getting into the country on an Argentine passport. And he said, no, I'm Argentine, I'm not Irish. And they held him in captivity for 24 hours before one of the Palatine priests in London came up to the airport and to search for him, and then discovered that he had been held because they were going to send him back to Argentina.
Yeah, that's an amazing quirk, as I say. Now, part of your research is very much focused on the newspaper of the Irish Argentines based in Buenos Aires, as the Southern Cross newspaper. Can you tell me how that informs your research?
Well, the Southern Cross was central to my research, because I wanted to look at how Irish Argentines responded to different facets of the ups and downs of politics from 1875 right up to the Dirty War. Now, as you know, when you're doing a PhD, you have to do a historical backdrop. And my historical backdrop was looking at the Argentine community and how it responded to the First World War, how it responded to the Second World War, how it responded to the rise of fascism, how it responded to the rise of Hitler. All of that was part of my remit in order to build up a sense of how the Southern Cross operated within the Irish Argentine community. And what I found was was disappointing at one level, but it was the reality that a lot of the editorials and the correspondence to the newspapers were at times xenophobic. They were anti-English. They were anti-Semitic. They tended to see themselves as a people apart, as it were.
And just to clarify for our viewers, the Southern Cross newspaper was founded by an Irishman.
The Southern Cross newspaper was founded by Father Patrick Dillon in 1875. But it's important to point out that there was another newspaper called The Standard that was founded by two brothers from the Mulhall brothers from Dublin. And their newspaper was founded in 1861 and became an international newspaper. It had stature, it had international cachet, but they were seen as pro-British and supporting the British Empire. And so they got a lot of buy-in from the very wealthy Irish Argentines, those who were millionaires, who made money on sheep and beef and other forms of agricultural farming, and they ploughed money into the Mulhall's newspaper, The Standard. Father Dillon also wrote for The Standard, and he was a very clever man. He became a priest very young. He was also a theologian. And when he arrived in Argentina, the Catholic hierarchy kind of spotted that he was somebody they could work with. And during the First Vatican Council, he was one of the perito, one of the experts that the Argentine Catholic hierarchy brought with them to Rome. And while he was in Rome, he would write back reports to the Standard. Why did he set up the Southern Cross? There's no archival information. There's nothing that says I'm setting up the Irish, the Southern Cross for this particular reason. But I have a feeling that having come back from the First Vatican Council and having realized that the Catholic Church was utterly opposed to any form of secularization and all the philosophies that were coming out of the Enlightenment and were beginning to affect and influence politics, and the very fact that Argentina eventually banned the teaching of the Catholic religion in schools in 1884, that he saw that coming, and he felt that the Irish community that was coming out were not warming to that. Because the Irish community really, even though they were Catholic, and even though Argentina was a Catholic country, they wanted their own priests.
Okay.
They wanted their own priests. And they felt that their Catholicism was quite distinct from Argentine Catholicism. And I think in a way he wanted to secure that kind of community, that they would have a newspaper that gave them information about Ireland, but also information about the Catholic faith.
We've established here that the Southern Cross had this particular idea of Irish identity. There are plenty of people in Irish Argentine history who didn't fit into that sense of identity, and I know you've dedicated part of your research to that. Probably the most well-known would probably be Che Guevara, but there's a lot of people in there who didn't feature in the Southern Cross. Can you tell us a bit about those people?
The historical marker for the conflict that that emerged in the late 1960s and 70s in Argentina with the Irish Argentine community was the impact of the Second Vatican Council and the rise of liberation theology in Latin America. Because one of the confusing aspects of Peronism is that on the one hand, he was seen as almost a proto-fascist leader, but on the other, he had introduced social changes that benefited the workers. And when he was exiled, that belief that somehow or other Argentina could reform itself and there could be a redistribution of wealth and all the rest remained. And so when big conference of Latin American bishops took place in Medellin in Colombia in 1968, and the whole concept of liberation theology was developed. This impacted on a lot of Argentines, including Irish Argentines, who decided that the church and working with the poor was one way in which they could transform society. Unfortunately, the state didn't see it that way, and nor did the hierarchical church in Argentina. They were opposed to anything to do with liberation theology. So you had a church in, I mentioned the Holy Cross Church, which was kind of the cradle of the spiritual aspect of the Irish-Argentine community, run by the Passionists. They began to develop a theology of the poor. They began to go out and provide pastoral help to the poor. When you had the when Pinochet was overthrown in Chile, they opened their doors to the exiles that were coming through on their way to Europe. The Irish Argentines, the traditional Irish Argentines, did not like that. And in fact, the first indication that the traditional Irish Argentines did not like what was going on was when, back in 1968, in October, Father Bernardo Hughes, at his Sunday Mass after Che Guevara was assassinated in Bolivia, he said, "I would like to us all to pray for the repose of the soul of Dr. Guevara." And half the church walked out. So you got a sense then that the community was not, the Irish Argent community was not going to support this radical approach that was coming from the liberation theologians, because they associated it with communism, with what was happening in Cuba. And they were people who had, as a former presidential candidate told me, Ricardo Lopez Murphy, that they had seen themselves as Irish people who worked hard, who had pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps, who had made money, and they were not going to give that money away in social welfare handouts to people who didn't work. So to kind of segue into one of the most traumatic events in recent Irish-Argentine history, and that is the murder of priests and seminarians at the Palatine Church, St. Patrick's, in a very well-heeled neighborhood of Belgrano. That happened in the 4th of July 1976. You had several priests there, Father Alfie Kelly, Father Alfie Layden, and then a priest of French extraction, Father Defoe. You had a number of seminarians, two of them Irish Argentine, Jorge Kelly and Bob Kilmeade. And they had imbibed this new approach to theology, and they wanted to work with the poor. The problem was that they were in a church that was right in the middle of a very wealthy district, which also included members of the armed forces. And when the dirty war started and the army began to raid people's houses, including picking up Irish Argentines like Lucia Cullen, for example, murdered and disappeared, Father Kelly spoke out, because he discovered that when the army arrested people, they would go in and steal all their property and then sell it off in auctions. And when he discovered that some of his parishioners were taking advantage of that and buying the sequestrated property in auctions, he spoke out about it in one of his sermons. And then he was treated as a pariah. He was considered a communist, and then a petition began to go around the community asking people to sign it so that he could be removed from the community. The very fact that the seminarians were out working with the community rather than playing the traditional role of being seminarians and saying prayers all the time also upset the local community, because they thought there's something going on here. These people are too radical. And then on the 4th of July, 1976, the Navy forces, or the kind of the death squad attached to the Navy forces, arrived at the parochial house and murdered the three priests and the two seminarians. And what actually happened was that the Irish Argentines didn't want to admit that this was something that they should explore and find out what happened. What they wanted to believe was that Father Kelly was a leftist, that he was a radical, and that he brought it on himself and on the other priests who were murdered, that it was his fault, rather than basically the state deciding that it wanted to take out anybody that was opposed or in favour of socialism or in favour of the redistribution of wealth. They wanted to take them out.
Okay, and in terms of the Irish community as it is now, do you think that they're in a transition, you know, in terms of maybe integrating that much more than perhaps they have done in previous generations?
Well, the Irish government talks about 500,000. The majority of those people are Argentines. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I started my research, the concept Irish Argentine was in vogue, but now it's Argentine Irish because they can no longer sustain the notion. Most people are Argentine and they have an Irish background. But the remnant that I talked about, the older people who were very, very conservative, they're still there. And perhaps they will pass on those conservative values to a younger generation, who knows. But there is a section of the Argentine community that did not accept what was happening and did write letters in support of Father Fred Richards and did stand up to the vitriol that he received from other Argentines, Irish Argentines, who were opposed to what he was doing. And I mentioned earlier the role of the writer Rodolfo Walsh. Mm-hmm. Now, when I set out on my journey to explore the Irish in Argentina, I was told, don't raise the question of Rodolfo Walsh. Rodolfo Walsh came from an Irish Argentine family. When his father fell upon hard times, the family was split up. And he attended what was a school for the poor Irish called the Fahy School, after Father Fahy. And when he became a writer, he wrote stories which incensed the Irish Argentine community because he talked about the brutality that he experienced in that school. And they felt that they were being let down. But they also felt they were let down because he was a member of the Montoneros. Now, he didn't start off life as a lefty. He started off life in the 1940s to the right. He was opposed to Perón. He supported the overthrow of Perón in 1955. But he wrote this extraordinary book called Operation Massacre. And he wrote it because he was incensed to discover that the military junta that had overthrown Perón had murdered 12 or 15 men, and they claimed that they hadn't, that these people were executed under a legal guise, and he investigated that and discovered that they weren't, and he was persecuted for that book. Once he wrote that book and he realized it kind of was an epiphany for him, and then the Cuban Revolution happened and he went to Cuba and he developed a much more kind of fine attuned analysis of how capital and labor worked and how people were exploited and all the rest, and he came back to Argentina and eventually became part of the Montoneros. Yeah.
So, Patrick, it's a fascinating study of a lesser-known element of the Irish diaspora. Can you tell us the title of the book and where people can get it?
I have a copy here. The Irish Argentine Identity in an Age of Political Challenge and Change, 1875 to 1983. And as I say, available in all good bookshops. It's published by Peter Lang.
Patrick, thank you very much for coming in and taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Rai Argentina to the world.
Rai, 世界に向けてアルゼンチン。
Rai Argentina al mundo.
Rai Argentina al mundo.
Rai Argentinian in die Welt.
Rai Argentina al mundo.
Coming up, the Argentine Science Update. But before that, a little bit of tango with Osvaldo Pugliese and The Butterfly. And this is the Argentine Science Update, produced by Julieta Galván. First, CONICET and National University of San Martin researchers have identified a promising new therapy for chronic Chagas disease. Current antiparasitic medications are largely ineffective at this stage and carry considerable side effects. The study, published in the journal Frontiers in Microbiology, suggests repurposing sorafenib, a drug already FDA approved, to treat certain types of cancer as a potentially more effective treatment against chronic Trypanosoma cruzi infection, the parasite responsible for the disease. The team identified the protein TCSR62 as a therapeutic target essential for the parasite's survival and replication within human cells. Through computational modeling and in vitro testing, they discovered that the drug inhibits this protein, eliminating both the infective and replicative forms of the parasite. Argentine Philosophy Journal gains international recognition. The journal Análisis Filosófico, published by the Argentine Society of Philosophical Analysis, the SADAF, has recently entered the first quartile, the Q1, of the prestigious International Shimago Journal ranking, becoming the first journal from Argentina and one of the few in Latin America to reach this position in the field of philosophy. The journal's editorial committee is mostly composed of CONICET researchers, and since 2018, SADAF has partnered with CONICET through the Executive Unit Institute of Philosophical Research. This international recognition reflects a collective effort involving editors, authors and reviewers, as well as institutional support from IIF and the dedication of professionals like Marina Pérez, who's responsible for the editorial office. For Santiago Ginobili, the chief editor and the president of SADAF, this achievement reflects the journal's rapid growth, as it was only indexed in the Scopus database back in 2018. Eduardo Barrio, a deputy chairman of the entity, emphasizes that keeping the journal open access shows that it is possible to move away from the traditional scientific publishing model.
RAI, Argentina al mundo.
RAI, Argentina, 面向世界.
RAI, Argentina vers le monde.
RAI, Argentina to the world.
RAI, 世界に向けて, Argentina.
RAI, Argentina al mundo.
La RAI, Argentina al mondo.
RAI, Argentinian in die Welt.
RAI, Argentina al mundo.
This is Artist of the Day on RAI, and today's Artist of the Day takes us north to the province of Salta, where some of the most beloved voices in Argentine folk music were born. We're talking about Los Nocheros, a group that redefined what folk could sound like in modern Argentina. They began in the late 1980s, blending traditional rhythms like samba, chacarera and carnavalito with romantic harmonies and a modern production style. The original lineup included Quique Teruel, Mario Teruel, Rubén Eizaguirre, and Jorge Rojas, who became one of the country's most recognized voices. That was Chacarera del Rancho, the Chacarera of the Hut, one of their biggest hits. In the 1990s, Los Nocheros were filling stadiums and headlining Argentina's most important folk festivals, like Cosquín and Jesús María. Their sound brought something new. While rooted in traditional forms, the songs spoke to a new, younger audience. They were romantic, emotional, and accessible, helping bring Argentine folk music into the mainstream, even in urban areas like Buenos Aires. Here's a hit from the 1990s by Los Nocheros, Cosa Peligrosa. Now, on this edition of The Artist of Today, we're going to play Entre la Tierra y el Cielo, which captures exactly what Los Nocheros stand for, earth and sky, the balance between roots and dreams. The lyrics talk about love, destiny, and belonging, themes that resonate deeply in a country where music is often tied to the landscape itself. Over the years, Los Nocheros have sold millions of albums and toured across Latin America, and they won countless awards. But more importantly, they've managed to connect generations, parents and children, singing the same songs together.
Yo siento que me provocas, aunque no quieras hacerlo. Está grabado en tu boca, arrojo vivo el deseo.
Y casi puedo tocarte como una fruta madura.
Presiento que voy a amarte más allá de la locura. Comerte el corazón a besos, a recorrer sin límites tu cuerpo, y por el suelo nuestra ropa, suave gota a gota, voy a emborracharte de pasión.
Voy a comerte el corazón a besos.
That was one of their biggest hits, Los Nocheros with Entre la Tierra y el Cielo. And next we're going to play by them a little bit of Al Rojo Vivo, which is another example of their powerful vocal blend. Four voices in perfect harmony, sometimes soft and intimate, sometimes bursting with energy. Although their style has evolved, their Salta identity remains at the heart of everything they do, and their songs often reflect the region's landscapes, the valleys, the hills, the warm air of the north, and the emotion of the people who live there.
En el alma y brota en la piel. Tócame, solo el deseo te hará mujer. El temor junto a la ropa caerá a tus pies.
Con su grito de amor me pone en celo tu timidez.
Corazón, yo quiero ser tu primera vez.
El temblor, los viejos miedos de la niñez.
Tómame, que la ternura sabrá qué hacer.
In 2005, singer Jorge Rojas left the group to pursue a solo career, and his departure was big news. But Los Nocheros kept going strong, with Álvaro Teruel, the son of Mario, joining the lineup and continuing the family legacy. Today, more than three decades after their debut, Los Nocheros remain one of Argentina's most iconic folk acts, bridging past and present, folklore and pop, tradition and renewal. And that was the artist of the day on RAE. Today, Los Nocheros.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentina, mien xiang shi jie.
RAE, Argentina vers le monde.
RAE, Argentina to the world.
RAE, sekai ni mukete, Argentina.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentinian in die Welt.
RAE. Argentina al mundo.
And with that, we come to the end of today's program of RAE in English for Monday, October 6, 2025. My name is Fernando Farias. Our sound technician was Walter Danesi. This show airs on 5,850 kHz on the shortwaves of WRMI and also via internet on RAE.com.ar. Thank you for listening. Hasta mañana.